Hello, it's the Big Mac Show. There's no Mac Show today, so Big and Mac have combined. We're here to talk the week in tech, and I have a fantastic panel for you today. And actually, it comprises of some fantastic ingredients. Like I say, tis the Big Mac Show. So, what do we have for you today? Well, it's the burger. He's succulent. He's tasty. It's Chris Campion. How are you, sir?
Good evening. I'm good, mate. I'm good.
Yeah, how's your week been?
Really busy week this week. It's just catching up. I had a few days off last week. It's just a catch-up week. I'm out and about next week for a few days as well. So just trying to cram a few full weeks worth of work into about four or five days now. So yeah, all good. And the kids are keeping me busy at home as well. So no rest for the wicked and all that.
Good dad stuff.
Absolutely good dad stuff.
I want to know more about the print on the wall behind you, Chris.
It's the Green Goblin Last Stand. That was a Christmas present. My daughter chose that one at Christmas.
That's really awesome.
That is awesome.
Yeah, Spider-Man and the Green Goblin Last Stand.
Good man.
She picked it. It got pride of place.
Oh, see, kids are so good at buying presents for dads who don't grow up.
Absolutely.
And next up on our Big Mac of guests, he's smooth, he's melty, he's the cheese. It's Ian Grant. Hello, sir.
Hello, mate. How are you doing? The cheese, indeed. It's funny that a silly story. My stepdaughter's friend heard my name as Edam, and so she thinks so apparently I'm known as Cheese. And it kind of it's been like it, and she calls me, and occasionally she calls me Cheese, and it's been funny ever since. But in other news, I've been teaching this week. I've been working around the house. Working from home this week has been a nice change.
The working from home, it's not a myth.
No, I got a load done. I had a couple of docs to write, and I got them banged out nicely because I didn't have any just got anyone mithering at me for stuff, so it was good.
You can't beat being at home and banging a couple out, can you?
Oh, absolutely no, not at all.
And now he's come to, he's back to join us. Alan joined us in this joke. As part of our Big Mac. He's sharp of tongue. He's well preserved. He's the gherkin. It's Alan Hatchell. How are you?
Evening,
sir?
All. I'm all right. Yeah, it's been this week's flown by, hasn't it? But yeah. It's all right. Looking down the barrel of the gun, heading towards Red Nose Day at the end of March.
Oh, of course, yes, you'll be a busy man, won't you?
Yes, just the sort of 5,500 lines and 91 call centres and the online donation platform as well. And yeah, you know, lots of stuff that needs to go right on the night.
No stress then.
No
stress. Oh, and did you actually physically kick your computer just then?
Pretty much, yeah.
Oh, good. That's always the best way. It always works.
You know.
Always
so works. There you go. Some PC abuse for the Big Mac Show.
Good man. And just to make it a little bit better, he's the secret sauce because he's a saucy devil. Jeffrey Gamet.
I was really wondering what my hamburger euphemism was going to be.
I actually can't take credit for it, Jeff. My wife came up with that for you.
I love your wife.
I will pass on your good wishes.
Well, what I want you to do is give her a hug for me.
Yeah.
And just breathe into her ear, maybe like a little.
Oh, she's just on the inside of this wall. She's wondering what the hell is going on.
And tell her Jeff's special sauce is in the post.
Oh, God. it travels well.
She did ask for it, to be fair.
Pardon? Whoa. She listened to
hey,
this.
No, this is all in the name of international relations.
Good. We like that. It's our special relationship, isn't it?
Very, very special.
And me, I'm Righty Boy. I'm the bun. I keep everything together.
There's been thought and everything into that.
I know. It's fantastic. Well, the thing is, I actually printed out a Big Mac at work, and I left it at work, so I had to draw one. Yeah, it looks nicer.
That's not a bad job.
Well, thank you. Anyway, as we all know, this is a tech party, and at this party, don't bring a bottle, bring a story. So which one of my delicious guests has a story for me first?
There we go.
Oh, Camps is in. Camps is in. You are a fast man.
I have to be. I've only got one story prepped tonight.
Oh, Twitter is now temporarily throttling the reach of abusive accounts. Finally, or is this just another...
Well, I don't know. I think there's a bit of a twist in this story. So we've all had a good old moan at Twitter. I think Twitter's one of those things that we all kind of love, but we all kind of hate it for the exact reasons that they've just got their whole handling of abuse, of trolls and everything like that, just wrong. And no matter how much feedback they've been given and no matter how much trouble Twitter seems to have gotten in terms of usage, they're just not getting it right. However, recently they've committed to doing something about this. So this is a story that I picked up, I noticed today. And what it appears that Twitter have done is they're in the process of rolling out some sort of algorithms. Now, so there's a couple of stories out there saying it looks like it's been applied onto famous accounts. However, other stories are saying, well, no, the algorithm's there for all accounts. And actually, some of the examples seem to tie in a little bit more with that. And what this is sort of saying is that the algorithms that Twitter have employed is identifying if abusive language is being put in tweets and is essentially suspending that user's tweets for a period of time. 12 hours is being quoted, and there's a bit of a countdown clock in there. And during the period of, I say suspension, it's almost temporarily disabling certain features or limiting certain features.
Yeah,
and that only people who follow you can see your tweets within that 12-hour period. So, if a good example that I've seen on one of the other stories related to this is somebody who tweeted the vice president, called him a name. Twitter, possibly a well-deserved name, but Twitter blocked and limited that person's Twitter usage for 12 hours, and therefore nobody other than that person, the people following that user, could see any tweets. And essentially, it stops the trolling for all of 12 hours before they can start again.
So is it an immediate thing, or is it, you know, if there's constant abuse or that there's a report of abuse on that account?
I've not found an article that goes into that level of detail yet. However,
I don't think anyone knows.
No, I don't think so yet. However, what I am seeing is that some people are using language that, yeah, absolutely might be offensive for some, but not necessarily aimed at some people. But it looks like the algorithms, there's an example in the story, I won't read it out specifically, so if you listen to this on audio, obviously have a look in the chat room, have a look at my link and have a read down the story. But there's some of the language that's used in there, it looks like people's account usage has been limited, albeit it's picking up certain language being used rather than specifically aiming that at some people, from what
I
can see.
The problem with all of these filters is they work on a term and not a context to the term.
Yeah, exactly.
So, we remember the days of all the email, of email filtering. I mean, it's still not, it's better now than it ever was. But certain terminology, I mean, in the industry I previously worked in, the railway, hardcore is a load of broken up rocks.
Yeah.
That they put underneath railway tracks.
Yeah.
But that got hit by a filter, as are sods, which are sods of earth. Again, terms used within the rail industry.
We've not in the
UK, which is a form of insult. And again, yeah, those sort of things get picked up. It's difficult to work out just quite, if they're using something as primitive as a word, as just a simple, if I see this word that I deem to be offensive, I will then block that thing. It's not going to work very well, is it?
Exactly. I've seen emails in the where I work in where the content of the email had Scunthorpe.
Oh yes, quotes classic. We had Scunthorpe won't get anywhere either. It used to be exactly. Old days. It wouldn't get anywhere.
Wait, say this word again.
Scunthorpe. It's a town. It's a town in the UK. And I'll spell it for you, Jeff. S C U N T H-O-R-P-E.
Can you see where we're going with
this? I see where you're going with this.
So
I never thought of that.
Absolutely. You could never send we always joke you could never send a Lorios of sods and hardcore to Scunthorpe because the email would never get through.
So I think it's great that Twitter is starting to make steps in terms of doing this. I'm not sure if they're going about it the right way, and I think that's possibly based on not enough information available at the moment to really understand how they're doing this. But I think from the examples that I've seen so far, there is the algorithms are really going to have to be something special to not pick up genuine content that's non-insulting content. And putting people on the naughty step for no real reason.
Yeah, because obviously you've got some sort of reporting tools in there. Maybe the algorithm kind of does a lot of league table of people have blocked you that many times or you've been reported that many times as well. So maybe you're put into a league of people that if you do overstep the mark, they're a bit more vigilant on the things that you say. But like you say, they're not really giving away much in terms of how they're doing it, but it could be taken out of perspective.
Absolutely. I've seen one story that suggests it could be linked to if your tweet is quoted in a response. So it's not specifically a tweet with a person's name on it, but if actually your tweet is quoted within a tweet and there's abusive language in there, then potentially that would be directly aimed at you or aimed about you. And I could understand how that might work a little bit better, but I think there's still flaws in this.
Yeah, I think they've got to do something because their name's pretty much mud at the moment. Us guys at BTN, we go to Slack now because Twitter became a kind of a cesspool that we didn't want to get involved in. I dip in now and then. I more look at it than engage with it now. I think...
So you're a Twitter voyeur.
Oh, yeah, I like to watch.
Nothing wrong with that.
See, I'm still quite. I like Twitter. I'm not a Facebook lover at all. Although I am on Facebook, I do like Twitter, and obviously I'm there in the Slack room. But I'm just thinking. I don't see how Twitter can win here, because they're almost damned if they do, damned if they don't. None of us like all of the trollism that's out there on Twitter right now. I think all of the scenarios that I'm seeing so far in terms of how they're trying to curb those behaviours and those abuse on Twitter, there's so many flaws within the plan or what appears to be flaws within the plan. I think that could just send as many people packing off Twitter because they're fed up of being blocked for what they may deem non-offensive intent.
But they have a verification program. A lot of the things that are normally deemed abusive come from either accounts that aren't in people's real names or and they did talk, I think, last year about rolling out the verification program to more people. And if you're out there with your real name, I think you're a blue tick, aren't you, Jeff, on Twitter?
Yes, I am.
And do you apply for that or
Yes. There's a whole process you have to go through. And there's several requirements they have before you can apply. And then when you do, you have this form that you fill out and you have to explain why you should have a verification check. And some people, they get approved and some people, they don't. And I mean, I got approved right away. Much to my surprise.
But all you put on the form is, I am Jeff Gamet.
Yeah. I all I did on the form is I said, Google me. And
or listen to any podcast.
Yeah, just listen to a podcast. Yeah.
But that would curb a lot of the abuse, wouldn't it? If people are out there with their real names, is it people who hide behind things or they get abused, they get shut down, then they create another fake email account and they create another Twitter account. There's nothing around stopping that sort of thing happening because you can block someone, you can suspend their account for 12 hours, but they can create five more Twitter accounts within that 12 hours.
Yeah, and Twitter have said that they are gonna clamp down on repeat abusers creating new accounts. I'm really intrigued in terms of how they're absolutely going to do that. Again, there's no real information coming out in terms of how they're planning on doing these things. But if people aren't being verified, if there's no verification steps in there whatsoever, I don't know. It takes 2 minutes to create a new email address, create a Twitter account, and then validate yourself via that email address. So interesting how they do it.
Yeah, now one of the ideas I've heard kind of touted around is, you know, people, they spread the verification program out further and wider to people who are willing to have their real names out there, which, you know, a lot of us do. And you should have an option when you go onto Twitter. You should be able to say, I only want to see posts from verified people. And then, but people who aren't verified don't get to talk to you, don't get to see them, they don't get to contact you or mention you in any tweets. That would be the way to clean it up. It's a massive task, but it'd go some way to kind of fixing the problem.
Yeah.
Although Google did that, and then what happened to Google Plus?
Well, Google Plus wasn't doing well before that.
Yeah, very true, very true. So, but yeah, I think if you're not going under your real name, it's very easy to say silly things. Like with your blue tick, Jeff, you're not going to say anything that's going to offend anyone, are you? Because it comes straight back to you.
It comes to BTN to do that.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Now, here's the problem I see with doing real names for everything, and this is a problem that Facebook had to deal with, and it's that there are some people that legitimately have a social presence online where they need, for whatever reason, to keep their name secret. You know, like maybe it's someone that's acting like a whistleblower, or you are an LGBTQ spokesperson in some way, advocate, and you need to protect yourself or your family because you're fear of repercussion. And so, so the point is, it's really hard to figure out how to address the abusers while maintaining the legitimate privacy of other users.
No, it's a real uphill struggle now because it's been going for so long, and I think they've left it for so long that it's got so bad. It happens everywhere. It's not just it's comments on websites. It's all over the place, isn't it? It's just people, if they think they can get away with it, they wouldn't say it to your face in the street, but they feel it's okay to say it online behind a mask of being online.
Well, once you put that screen in front of someone's face, you're creating a barrier that for many people becomes a barrier from responsibility. And so they don't see the repercussions of their actions, and they forget that it's a real person on the other end, the receiving end of whatever it is they're saying or doing. And until we can find a way to get people to understand that and to then act responsibly, I don't see a solution coming. No, that sounds horrible.
What happened to that digital identity service? A few years ago, there was someone that was trying to come up with a thing you could sign into, and you could have a verified ID that was Ian Grant, that was whatever, you know, Paul Wright. What happened to that? I'm just Googling for it now, trying to find. I think we talked about it on here. I mean, it was a few years ago, but there was a service you could sign into that would link everything. Yeah, it was different days gone by where you could link everything in, and you would actually have a properly verified identity,
like digital ID card kind of thing.
Oh yeah, absolutely. But it was for online, and I'm just frantically Googling now to try and find the thing that I remember us talking about, but it's long gone. It was open source, I'm sure. And if anybody else remembered the name of the thing.
The name that comes to mind is About Me, but I know that's not what you're thinking of.
It was beyond that kind of, it was beyond that kind of stuff, which it'll appear.
I love the one of, I just chucked in the chat room, there's a link to a GIF of some dogs barking at a fence. Sort of thing, except the fence is actually retracting and the dogs actually are barking at each other through the smaller and smaller fence, ignoring the gap that's widening. And then as soon as the fence is almost open, they just walk off and leave each other alone.
That is a perfect analogy.
Beautiful internet, all internet arguments ever.
Yes.
That is awesome.
That is so perfect.
Online identity verification service.
Ah.
There's a media, it wasn't called that, it was called something else. And there's also a direct ID. I found a couple now that are all an ID now. There's a few there that you can actually sign up to, which will provide you with a unified identity, essentially, is what thing I'm trying to get to. Is this idea of a thing that's a unified identity that sits with you and is in the same way as your birth certificate or your driving license or whatever, as a confirmed proof of who you are.
Mm. Thing is, when the internet started, it was meant to be this amazing thing where we'd all shared knowledge and it was going to be this amazing thing, you know.
It was all free as well.
Yeah, and now it's just a cesspool of debauchery and God knows what. It's not what it was meant to be. It's like any...
You said debauchery like that's a bad thing.
Well, I live in Norfolk. It comes in various forms.
Oh, of course.
But the internet's like any kind of city, isn't it? It's got bad bits, it's got good bits, and the streets you shouldn't walk down. It's just don't walk down those streets. Stay in the light. That's what we say. Stay safe, kids.
Indeed.
Indeed. Well, thank you, my juicy burger, Mr. Campion. Very good story. Who's who next in my...
It's not quite...
Well, in that case, bang, there's mine for next.
My tasty gherkin has given me Google's new mixed reality text makes VR headsets invisible-ish.
Yeah, so basically this seems to be... So what Google have done is they've decided that one of the problems with VR adoption is that when you show someone enjoying a fantastic VR experience, they look like an idiot with a headset on their face, and you can't sort of tell that they're actually enjoying it because you can't see their face because it's covered by a big VR mask.
They look like they've been humped by a toaster.
Yes. And they're also wildly waving their arms around in no particular coordinated
fashion.
Yeah.
So what they've decided to do is give people their faces back. And basically, the downside of this is it needs quite a lot of work and setup. Basically, before they put you in the VR system, they ask you to sit down and 3D scan your face and digitally map your face. And then the VR headset that they've got includes... eye/face tracking inside the mask, and then they manipulate your digital face and then superimpose it on top of the mask to basically give you your face back and make the VR mask you're wearing semi-transparent.
Am I completely off base? Because the only thing I can think right now is this is the most ridiculously stupid thing I've ever seen.
VR headsets that anyway, to be honest.
So,
or maybe I'm being old and grumpy.
The video at the bottom of the article kind of walks you through it and stuff, but it is kind of... Now they've said, this same technology will also allow us to give you a photorealistic avatar face when you're inside VR, which, okay, a bit, but the practicalities of the setup and stuff. So I think this is all just actually about making VR demos not look as stupid when they show the person in VR.
They failed.
They failed
badly.
So
I mean, I look at this and my first thought, well, you know what my first thought was. And sorry if we have to edit, that just kind of came out. But my second thought is, oh, great. Now when you put the thing on your face that hides your identity so no one realizes how stupid you are, you've lost that because your face is now plastered all over the front of the birth control mask.
And of course, worse than that, it's actually, you know, a potentially slightly badly scan digital recreation of your face being allegedly manipulated to match your real face via scanning inside the mask.
It just makes everyone look like they've got a sex face on. So that's what they look like, because the eyes don't move. He's like,
the eyes don't follow the movement.
The dude looks possessed.
I think they've again got the problem of, you know, VR's obviously got one of the big problems with VR is latency, and now they've got latency of manipulating this fake 3D face and superimposing it on top of the VR demo that they're trying to show you in. Someone in Google has obviously put a lot of thought and work into this, but I think they've gone headed straight down the uncanny valley.
The good idea was when they used to let people at Google come up with their own ideas, and someone on a Friday afternoon had too many tequilas, and he's like, "You know what? I'm gonna scare my face."
So, I mean, obviously, it does smack a bit of
stupid.
Okay, yeah, smacks a bit of that. It also smacks a bit to me of sort of Google trying to pretend that this somehow makes it more like augmented reality, in that suddenly, you know, the VR headsets aren't, you know, you can see through them. No, you can't.
No, but the picture at the top of that post.
Yeah.
It's seriously disturbing.
It looks like the last thing I see before that man murders me.
Right.
He's having so much fun pushing those virtual blocks, if you watch him near the end of the video at the bottom.
What he's saying in that photo is, "I'm going to wear your skin while I kill your family."
Yeah. My God.
I think Serenax cracked in the chat room saying it's a Max Headroom face on the outside of the VR.
It is.
Yes. No, Max Headroom face would be cool.
Well, yeah. Nice, Serenax. Oh, my word. No. Well.
Yeah, I felt I had to share it.
No. It's definitely... It's shareable stuff, but I think Google are really, So let's form Alphabet and do bets on things. Yeah, I think someone.
But yeah, it's definitely worth checking out the animated GIF and the video in that article. But not just before you're going to go to bed. It may give you nightmares.
That bloke's face is going to haunt me till the day I die. Jesus Christ. Straw poll, who would like to see their face or their sex face plastered across a VR headset in virtual reality?
I'm gonna pass on that one.
Oh God. Hey, it'd be quite a good fancy dress thing, wouldn't it? You know, get a picture of your face, stick it across like a toaster, strap it to your head.
No, I want someone else's face. If I'm going to a costume party, fancy dress party.
Yeah. No, you do that. You strap your face across the toaster, tie it to your head, and say, "I've come as a prick." Oh well. As your gherkin tongue has said, maybe not. I'm not convinced. I'm ready to go and get a felt tip pen and like draw my noggin on my Google Cardboard now. Just a free
I am tempted to think that some googly eyes stuck on the outside of your Google Cardboard might be just as effective.
No, there you go. Done.
That'd be funnier.
Yeah.
That'd be funnier.
I'm okay with that.
See, I love that Google give their people time to go and research their own projects. Who signed off public release of that?
Oh. No, I think get the eyes on it.
Well, the thing is, it's you know, joint developed by Google Research and Google Daydream Labs, the ones that are responsible for the Daydream VR coming through smartphones.
So, is there going to be a scenario that actually the next version of Google Glass is almost going to have a screen, an externally facing screen on the front of it, showing that virtual image? So when people are looking at you in real life to see that image rather than a blank headset.
Well, that's it, because at the moment this system still requires, you know, a green screen and, you know, your head to be 3D scanned beforehand, and that's a hell of a lot of, you know, yeah, there's a hell of a lot of things. The only one that says in terms of you may shockingly actually see this turn up and in use is that apparently Google's going to make the tech available in its YouTube spaces that have green rooms and things for popular creators on its YouTube platform.
Oh, we're never going there, then, are we?
No, well, not now that we've insulted them.
No, stick the eyes on the front. We can have googly cardboard.
Googly cardboard.
I think that's the way to go.
Yeah. Oh wow, that is stuff of nightmares.
But I think it is Google getting sort of AR mixed and mixed reality jealousy, or trying to deflect from the fact that, you know, VR is more closed in and you are boxed off from the world while you're wearing it. It's not like you can actually you're not superimposing things on the world, and this is green screen trickery to make people believe that you're not trapped away in your own little headset bubble.
Go and get some friends. Oh, well, that's very, thank you for bringing that to our attention. Oh God. Can we melt some cheese on this, Mr. Grant?
We can. We're going to talk about my link was all about ad blocks.
Oh,
ad blocker. There's first bit that was on BBC News. If you go on that one, that looks about, it's a company called company used to be called Adfender.
Yep.
And have now rebranded as an ad, are now actually selling ads.
Oh,
so become an ad platform. So poachers and gatekeepers is one thing, which is moderately dodgy. And look also, if you follow, there's also a couple other links in the same article about one where the ad block usage isn't growing. I mean, and also, which also surprises me, to be fair, because I mean, it's almost the first thing I install on any browser I tend to set up. And the other question I've got is, looking at ad blocking now, is anyone finding that they go even to the most mundane of website, like particularly my local newspaper, the York Evening Press? I can't view anything on their website without a dirty great banner on.
Yeah.
No.
Unless I clear the block for that, for example. And that's becoming more and more prevalent now. So are we kind of beating ourselves over our own heads with ad blockers, or do the ad blockers need to be cleverer now?
Well, the advertising needs to be better.
Most people, the advertising needs to be better, because I mean, I've not got an ad blocker on my Chrome that I'm using for tonight. I've just had to put one on because I went on to that link from the Ink just now, and that's full of chuffing adverts that bounce up everywhere. Mm. Alan put it, there's the Ink Archive's got loads of little animated ads and things, video and everything bobbing up, and it's, that's just too distracting. You don't need that when you're trying to read something, which is why we use ad blockers.
So they were an ad blocking company.
Yes.
Sell ads.
They'll sell ads. And I'm slightly suspicious of some of the ad blocking profiles that you use via things like Adblock and stuff are not actually allowing certain ads through. And there was a talk of that a while ago, wasn't there? That there's some companies.
I don't remember which one it was, whether it's Adblock Plus or the other one had started get into, supposedly verified publishers could go and get into their approved ad program that would get through their ad blocker, unless you paid an extra premium for their program's cost.
So verified actually means how much money you pay.
Yeah.
Which is why they set the ad block up things up in the start, really, isn't it? It's like, we'll block the ads, and then if you want your ads to come through, I don't think they
give us some money.
Yeah, I don't think they ever did it in the notion of, we're going to save you from dodgy internet advertising. One day they knew that it was going to get so frustrating, because obviously you go to a lot of websites now and they go, we see you're running an ad blocker, please turn it off. If you know, and for a lot of sites that I support, I don't run the ad blocker on it, because I believe that they should get, you know, the views that they deserve. But for general surfing and things, it's a pain in the ass. But this company, it's like a policeman who burgles your house.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, it's complete madness. But apparently the ad blocker usage isn't growing, according to this, the report saying that the people using it. I mean, is it people don't know about it, or?
I think most people don't know.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Because I have my ad blocker turned on my phone, within the preferences on the iPhone, I've got the same turned on all of my browsers. It's kind of makes sense.
Yeah, well, but if you think about it, I mean, a lot of people go, but. You know, the stuff I'm seeing on the internet is free. Therefore, you know, it's like ITV. I have to put up with ads. And so they just don't necessarily, you know, they think, okay, yeah, internet means ads, sadly.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, it is a genuine revenue stream for a lot of people. Jeff being one of them, really, isn't it, with a Mac Observer?
Yeah. Mac Observer generates all of its revenue through ads.
Mm. And do you vet your, I guess you vet your ads to be more kind of targeted to your audience though, don't you?
Yes. And I mean, as much as we can.
Yeah.
And we have a company that we work with to help find appropriate ads for the website and the podcasts.
Yeah.
And generally speaking, they do a really good job. And if we have an ad space that needs to fall to one of the other services, then we don't have as much control. So every now and then we get ads on the site that I look at and I'm like, this needs to go. But the thing is, when I see an ad like that, I have the connections. I can go to the right people mm-hmm. that are involved with our advertising and say, this is an inappropriate ad for our site. And then it's just gone.
Yeah. That's the best way to do it, because a lot of people just let anything in, don't they?
Yeah, but you know, it's hard because we're in a market where for a lot of businesses, ad revenue is the income. Mm-hmm. And how do you find the balance between ads that are appropriate for your audience and are not too obtrusive? And then also deal with the fact that you know people are using ad blockers, and so those people are not seeing the ads. That's lost revenue, and finding that happy balance in there. Clearly, no one has found it yet.
So how do you feel about being a site that covers Apple when Apple kind of promote content blocking?
Well, the way I see it is Apple is just making it pretty clear that the state of internet advertising is a hot mess. So what I do, I don't use an ad blocker on my desktop mm-hmm. because to me it feels like I am being a hypocrite if I'm blocking ads when my paycheck comes from ads.
Very true.
So yeah. So I don't block on my desktop, but I do run an ad blocker on my iPhone because I'm doing so much internet stuff on my cellular connection, and the amount of data that the ads were chewing through was insane, and websites were taking so long to load. It was in many ways making my internet experience unusable. So on my iPhone, I do use an ad blocker there. But you know, a lot of the ad blockers, you can go in and whitelist sites so their ads come through. So for the sites that I really want to make sure that the ad revenue is happening, that you know, like sites that I'm going to all the time, as long as it doesn't kill my connection, then I let their ads come through. But for the most part, I don't see ads on my iPhone.
So that's a fair way to do it, because we all have those sites we go to every day, and it's part of our entertainment, it's part of our news, it's part of our learning and all those sort of things. And I think, you know, if you go there and don't allow them to make any sort of revenue, then you're kind of adding to the problem as well, because those sites will go away.
Yes, and we have seen so many sites going away over the past couple of years. What I call the specialized news sites, the boutique news sites, mm-hmm. and they're just gone. And look at the Apple news market. How many of the websites that we used to look at almost daily 2 years ago are still here?
Yeah, it's true.
And there aren't very many left.
No. No, it is. We've got past the day of the Punch of the Monkey and all those sort of things. But I think those full back, you know, if you get to a site and it covers the entire site with an advert, that's just egregious. That really is.
Yes. Or if you're forced to watch a video ad with audio on to see a website.
Yeah.
There's no content there I need to see.
Or a 30-second advert for 10-second video or something like that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's like you say, it's a hot mess. It really is. It's something that the whole industry needs to look at. Like you say, the whole internet kind of revenue stream is ad based, and adverts are useful as well, you know, in their own way, because they do influence our buying habits, and they should, because I do a lot of stuff incognito because I don't want the stuff that I already know about. I want to learn about new products. I want to learn about things I don't know about, or something that, you know, if I'm looking for gifts for someone or something like that. Because the trouble that you have at the moment with the tracking and all those sort of things, you see all the stuff that you already know about. And you're probably less...
Yeah, something you already bought. Now you start seeing ads for competing products. It's too late.
I know.
So, Jeff, which ad blocker do you use on your iPhone?
That's a really good question. Let me tell you, because I don't remember.
I can't remember the name of it. I deleted the app, so I was flicking through to see if I could find out which one it was. The one I used to use, and I'm trying to find the name of it, I deleted that just because I found that ad blocker was slowing down my browsing.
One blocker.
So, one blocker.
Yeah.
That's what
I use Firefox Focus on mine because Firefox has a private browser, but it also links the ad blocking into Safari as well, which is quite useful, and that's free.
Oh, that's neat. I use AdBlock Plus.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like OneBlocker because of the granular control you have over all the settings. And I do like that they added in what they call the block anti-ad block feature. Because, you know, there's some websites that if they detect an ad blocker, you're just out. And that's it. So they added in a feature so those anti-ad block sites, you can now block the element that blocks you from seeing the site.
Oh, wow. Now, okay.
And see if I can get the angle right so you can see the icon for that.
Yeah.
I love their icon of choice for that.
Yeah. Gets the message across.
It gets the message across.
Yes, perfect. Yeah, no. Ad blockers, there's a need for them. There's a need for advertisers to do better. There's a need for people to make revenue. So where you start with that, I have no idea. I really don't.
I have an idea.
Oh, and thank you.
So what we need to do is go back to the model from before Google Ads. The whole Google Ad network came into being, that's when advertising online just totally fell apart into the steaming pile that it is today. So what you did before was you had systems where the server side was figuring out everything that you need to know to deliver an ad to someone. And it was done in, assuming you designed your site correctly, a non-obtrusive way. And now you're expecting the receiving computer to do crazy amounts of processing to figure out what crappy ad to show you. We don't need that.
No,
we need to go back to the pre-Google ad days.
Let's go back in time to a better time, eh, Jeff?
To a better time.
So, do you know what I need now to cheer me up?
I need a my drink.
Well, no, I wish. I need my special sauce, Jeff. Pour special sauce all over me.
All right. Well, I'll start with the URL for the special sauce. And now it seems kind of appropriate because we started by kind of bagging on Google, and now we'll wrap up by bagging on Google. So here's the deal. Google, they had a problem yesterday where everyone was getting logged out of their Google services. Well, that's kind of annoying because now you have to re-log into your Gmail account and stuff like that. But it showed an underlying problem with the way Google handles some of their products. So if you're using the Google Wi-Fi or the Google On Hub, so you were running a Wi-Fi network based on Google products,
right?
Your network stopped because their systems are cloud managed. So even though you have this Wi-Fi router in your house, it requires a constant connection to Google to work. So when everything went down and it killed all the settings and you had to reset up all your devices, your Wi-Fi connection was toast.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. that is. Oh, and I had such hope for Google Wi-Fi as well. It was touted as being quite good, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, you know, Nest is touted as being really good, but without an active internet connection, your thermostat doesn't work.
Good point. Yeah. And if you've got any security systems or home automation systems, I guess, as well.
Yeah.
It's definitely, definitely someone, you know, some project manager went happy path on this one, didn't they? And they said, ah, well, there'll never be a problem, you know, being able to sign in to Google. Don't worry about that one.
With smart doors unlocking all over the States.
Right. And you don't get the alert because your Google Wi-Fi router is offline.
Yeah. So how do you get back online in that scenario?
I know.
I think you have to do a factory reset. And reset up the device from scratch.
Whoa.
That's embarrassing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it tells me everything that I need to know about using Google's hardware in my home, which is nope.
No. That puts me right off.
Completely.
That is
why is it now I'm more and more concerned about anything that Google has that I don't want it anywhere near anything electronic or that's mine?
Yeah, I'm kind of an enabler in that way, aren't I?
You do provide a service, Jeff.
Yeah, well, you know.
Yeah, there's in the Google Wi-Fi help link off the document is saying, you know, if your primary point's affected, it'll pulse blue and then needs to be reset up.
Oh, yeah, I see.
That's
yeah.
Terrible.
Your primary Wi-Fi pot is up line.
Factory reset. Yeah.
Meanwhile, you somehow need to get online to probably check your Google account through via cellular or something like that, I'm assuming.
Well, certainly you're going to be worried, aren't you? Oh, has my Google account been hacked? Oh, I better check via cellular and stuff. And then you're going to go, let's just hope they didn't do that one of, you know, a more recent update said you're not allowed to do the factory setup until it's checked whether there's any updates to download first. You know, give yourself a full catch 22. Someone's going to do that at some point, aren't they?
And that is the weakest apology from them.
Don't worry, your stuff's okay.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Because even in the link, it's saying if you can't remember your password, here's the link to recover your account. So you're definitely then going to have to use cellular to get on to reset your password because you probably can't remember it.
And I'm sitting inside your house with the rogue Wi-Fi connection, recording everything you do.
That's right. Yeah, is your internet connection down? Click this link to figure out how to fix it.
Yeah.
Free Wi-Fi. I love those free Wi-Fi hotspots you see everywhere. If you ever click to one of those, don't come talk to me.
Yeah, no kidding.
Crazy.
Wow. It's that thing with Google where something goes wrong and they're just like, yeah, it happened. Get over it. Because they've got no proper customer support, have they? They've got nowhere you can go, really. You get a bunch of websites that obviously you can't look at because, you know, Google tweeted out what's going on, but you can't see it. Yeah. That is, oh God, that's seriously put me off anything to do with those. I thought these kind of new mesh networks and stuff, because that and the Eero and things like that, you know, they said it was always great because they're cloud configured and they update in the background. You don't ever need to worry about them, but if they go offline, you're scuppered.
So I'm using an Eero setup. And yeah, the use your iPhone through the cloud to do the configuration. Mm-hmm. That part annoys me just a little bit because I'd really rather be able to just do it straight from an app. Yeah. And they could change that. We'll see. Okay. Apparently Nightshade's feeling well enough. She's going to move around. You know, the rest of it, it just works. So if I lose a cloud connection to their service, my mesh network continues to run because only the configuration part is managed through their cloud service.
Oh, right, I see.
And I think part of the reason they did that was so that if you need to reset up, you know, like do a factory reset, all you have to do is log in to your account, and then it just propagates everything back to your Eero network.
That's better.
Yeah, that sounds like a way better way of doing it.
Yeah.
I bet they're going to put that at the top of their website, actually, this week, going, think about getting a new router.
Yeah. Ours isn't going to die like Google's.
Yeah, that's all you need, isn't it? It's like our phones won't catch fire.
Yeah, I mean, at least we're not Google.
I mean, this also gives you the other worry of any of these services, of these really smart things, is, okay, right, well, in this case, it was, you know, a logout problem with your Google account. But this also does suggest that you are dependent on, you know, Google Cloud services. If that service gets decommissioned, not that Google would ever stop a service that they've ever launched.
Oh, true.
Then suddenly that chunk of expensive electronics goes dead.
Yeah.
I am facing that myself. September of next year, my transporter stops working. It's a personal cloud server. So it's like having Dropbox sitting on your shelf.
Oh yes.
And I love this thing. I use it locally and I use it remotely all the time. And it's a cloud storage system that I control completely down to the hardware. And the company that makes it was sold to someone else, and that company has discontinued the product.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, and so they posted a notice on their website. I never got an email. I found out through word of mouth. But on their website, it has the date. It's like September 1st of next year. They're just shutting down the service. So even though I've got all the hardware sitting here and I manage it through an app on my iPhone and I connect to it locally or remotely, September of next year, it's just dead.
So, Jeff, is that like the Western Digital My Cloud?
Yes, yes. It's similar to that. Yeah. So at some point, I'm going to switch to something else, maybe the Western Digital setup. We'll see. And I'm just going to have to yank the drive out of my transporter and put it in something else.
Wow.
But the point is, yes, having to be reliant on a cloud service for the operation of a piece of hardware you have, I don't like that idea.
No,
and to be fair to Google, I believe they have gone tweak things related to Nest, Jeff, in that I believe, you know, your Nest will be a lot more dumb, but you can now do pretty much most of all of the basic features, i.e. a timing of heating coming on and off and stuff without an internet connection now. Whereas again, I think, originally, there were some significant dependencies.
Yes. Yeah. That was a problem, I think, last winter on the East Coast of the United States.
Yes. Yes. I remember that.
And so it was like deadly cold for several days, and Google or Nest pushed out a software update to their thermostats, and it killed their internet connection, which meant that there were people scrambling to find the, you know, just the cheap little Mercury switch thermostats, the $10 jobs, so that they could rip their Nest off the wall and put that on so they could get their furnace to turn back on so they wouldn't die.
Okay.
Well done, Nest.
Well, no, in the UK, because we have different systems, if you've got a combi boiler, you actually get in the UK a two-part Nest system. You get a thermostat on the wall, because I say I've got one, but you also get a white box that's next to your boiler. And if something goes wrong with the Nest thermostat, the white box has a single middle button that I can push to manually turn on my boiler, just a physical push button.
Wow.
If the fancy, nice, funky controller goes dead. So yeah, that sounds like they've learned, doesn't it, a bit?
Why don't they do like Ecobee and make it so it works even when there's no internet connection?
I think the normal thermostat bits do now work, because I did have my router go funny for a day or so, and the Nest kept working on its normal timings, although it had lost Wi-Fi connection to my router. So believe, you know, at least in the UK model, that's a two-part model. And as I say, from about 3 to 6 months ago, it seemed to cope. My Nest coped with a day of no internet, and still did its normal stuff.
All right, that's good.
Yeah, I have a solution. If it gets cold here and all of my thermostats go down, I do have a solution. I have a Tonton in the back garden, so I go out and I cut it open with a lightsaber and I cover my family in guts.
and you know what temperature it is on the inside?
Exactly.
Lukewarm.
Oh! You genius, Jeff. You genius. Oh, great story. Great story. Right, I've got a quick one for you, just because I heard this today. Before I put it in the chat room, a quick thing. I want you to grab your phone and put it in front of the screen as fast as you can. There we go. How far are you ever away from your phone? I'll put it in the chat room now. Does being away from your phone make you stressed?
No.
Yes.
No. Two no's. I'm a yes. Alan?
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
I'll be honest.
So it's just a thing I saw today. Some psychologists in Hungary have done a test with 18 to 26-year-olds where they took their phones away for different periods of time and just to see what the kind of effect was. And in some of them, it was kind of raised heart rate. Some after 3.5 minutes, they put them in a cupboard, knocked them away. Some were just hovering around the cupboard, not knowing what was going on. They were just panicking. What are they saying here? They were asked to do puzzles where they couldn't control on, they couldn't concentrate on. So heart rate was up. They were fidgeting. They were scratching their faces. They were stressed. Now, I don't get like that. But the question is, I didn't have, you know, like if I had a favorite toy when I was young and someone took it away, I'd probably cry or something like that. I don't remember. I block it all out. But the trouble with children today, and I think that's why it's an interesting thing with these 18-year-olds, is they've had this technology with them so young, and kids get smartphones and things so young. So when you take it away, it must just be a natural thing for them to like feel like they've lost an arm or something.
I suppose it's comfort blanket, like a teddy or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Because they're like probably
it's like the modern equivalent. I mean, it's difficult talking to us, a group of 30-something plus blokes. I'll be nice.
Oh, you're so kind.
I'll be nice to myself. And we grew up without the need for the interaction with the little box. I like it, and it's handy to have in my pocket, but I can do without it.
See,
I've got something.
I don't even
fine.
Know what these words coming out of your head mean.
I was going to say it depends. You know, if it's my choice to be separated from my phone, that's fine. And, you know, I could happily, you know, go off, you know, decide that I don't want my phone on me for, you know, half a day, whatever, you know. But to be fair, this one, obviously, they removed the phone and locked them away. It wasn't exactly the kid's choice, so that does add a bit more to it, doesn't it?
I think for me, I have to have it in my hand pretty much all day. It's either ringing, it's texting, or I'm checking it for emails and I'm sending stuff out on it. When I'm at home, so I have a work phone and I have my own phone, and I've always kept them separate. So when I'm not at work, I can put it to one side and I don't have to worry about it. But there's plenty of times when I'm at home and I'm thinking, like, I don't know where I've put it. When was the last time I had it? A couple of hours ago. And I genuinely don't worry about it. Now, whether that's because I've got an Apple Watch on my hand, so actually, if anything, if a text came in or Slack or anything like that, I could probably see it from there. But there's loads of times. One time where I really do notice is I can be sat on the sofa of the TV as my boy's falling asleep on me, and I'm not going to get up and move for fear of disturbing him. And think, well, oh, I might have a quick catch up now on Slack or on Twitter. Oh, where's my phone? I've left it upstairs. Oh, sod it. I'm not going looking for it. I can cope with it without it. And yeah, genuinely at home, I don't have that where's my phone anxiety. during working hours because of my work phone, it's constantly, where is it? I can't miss things.
That's fair. But you all whipped them out pretty quick then, didn't you?
Oh, yeah, it's on the desk.
Oh, yeah.
I'm doing a technology podcast. What else am I going to have with me? This phone.
But I think if I'd have called you all up at 3 o'clock this afternoon, you probably would have not been much slower than that. Yeah, I don't think it's within generally, unless like with camps is upstairs, it's not generally in more than 10 feet of us, even if we don't know where it is. And like Cam said, the watch is a great thing because it'll buzz on your wrist and you can say, okay, that's bullshit. I'm not going to answer that. It's rubbish. But at least if you know it's something important, you need to follow up. You can either go and find your phone or get on a laptop and deal with it. So it has been a thing. But I think it's just this thing of, you know, my daughter got her first iPhone when she was, nine. And I think if you take it away from her, she's like, what are you doing? Or if you go, oh, I can fix that for you. What's your passcode? She's like, what? What do you want that for? You know, they're so protective of these things now, aren't they? But I think Ian's right. It's like that security blanket thing, just the modern technology version of it.
I quite like the truly evil idea that Windrider put in the chat room, you know, as punishment rather than taking the taking the phone away from the child, just remove their charges. But that gave me the idea of maybe they should do another study of they leave the phones with the children, but they're not charged.
Right. Oh, God.
So, you know, is it that they physically need, you know, is it a physical comfort blanket of the phone? Or obviously, you know, how much is the connectivity versus the object?
They need to be able to stare into a little rectangle.
No, because they're all doing that thing at school where they try to charge them a potato now. I can just imagine the vegetable rack getting raided.
I did jury duty probably about 18 months ago now, maybe 2 years ago. And
yeah, cheers for that.
Yeah, when you sat around in there waiting to be put on a case, and as soon as you get aligned to a case and you're getting ready to go into court, they ask you for your phones, they lock them, they put them in a locker, and they give you them back when you come out of court. And it was really interesting for me to see that when people came out and went back into sort of like the communal area, the queue to the court dude, I can't remember what he was called, to get people to get their phones back. It was like, that was priority for so many people. That was probably the longest queue, not the meal queue, not the queue for the coffee machine. It was the queue to get my phone back. Queue.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. No, I had a thing a couple of years back. I went to Disneyland Paris, and we were going through the Channel Tunnel, and obviously had no signal. And I think people had gone for about, I don't know, an hour and a half without a signal. And at that point in my life, I was doing Foursquare. I was checking into that, doing this, and sending 50 tweets a day. And my wife was always like, leave it alone. I was like, no, I'm going to check in here, I'm going to check in there. And I didn't realize how sad I was. And as we came out of the Channel Tunnel, everyone's phones just suddenly burst into life. And what one chap in front of me and the coach said, if no one sent me a message on Facebook, I'm going to kill myself. And I just went, delete Foursquare, delete this, delete that. I'm leaving it all. Yeah, I know. I was like, oh, God. So, no, I'm much more or less visible online just because of that one thing. I thought I sound just like him.
That's so impressive, though. Only an hour and a half and a stranger's comment managed to put you through a digital detox.
Well, and being shoved through a metal tube at 200 miles.
Okay, that's a bit more extreme part of the digital detox.
There you go, see? Oh, fantastic, guys, fantastic. That is the tastiest burger I've consumed in a very, very long time. Okay, as you know, this show and all of the others are supported by UK2. Now, I'll tell you one thing. This week, I spoke to UK2 because unfortunately for my hosting with another provider, I admit it, but I thought, do you know what, I'm gonna hop onto UK2, and I just dropped the DM and they were straight back to me. They passed me on to the help guys. They sent me all the details I need, and now we're at the moment just going through everything. They're migrating everything for me, domains, email accounts, everything. and they've just been absolutely brilliant. And if you want to get into UK too, get on over to the Support Us page over at BritishTechNetwork.com, and we've got discounts for you as well. Domains, VPN, VPS, hosting, all of those sort of things. And if you really do love that UK2 Support Us, because without them we couldn't do any of this, drop them a tweet at UK2 and just say, we love you, because you support British Tech. And I said that, actually, when I DM'd them, I said, thank you so much for supporting us. And when they wrote back, they went, thank you for supporting us too. So it's reciprocal. And they're really lovely people. So thank you, UK2. You are awesome. So, and he's on. I'm running to time tonight. This is amazing. Oh God, we can go with the cool things, Mr. Campion. What have you got for me, boy?
Let me get. Sorry, just 1 second. I'm gonna grab a link. So I've become a little bit addicted to Apple Watch straps, Apple Watch bands.
Yeah, you're a bit kinky with that now, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm really liking them, and I found a really really nice one. There we go. It's the Meridio Bands. So this is an Italian company, Italian leather, various different types of leather bands that they've got. And the quality is absolutely superb. So I've got it on, you see it on there. I've got the khaki sun here. It's probably a good sort of 2, maybe 3 millimeters thick. Ooh, is the leather in a vintage type. Almost rugged type strap, really, really comfortable. Initially, when I got it out of the box, I thought, is the leather going to be a little bit rigid? Is it going to be a bit sort of uncomfortable to wear? And it's really, really not. The packaging it came in, for everyone who likes Apple products, it came in a box. Inside that box was another box. Inside that was a lovely envelope, and then the strap all wrapped up inside it. Really nice. I suppose compared to a lot on Amazon, it's not cheap, but the quality is absolutely there. When you compare it to the Apple leather straps, I'd say the quality is without a doubt just as good and a lot cheaper than the Apple leather straps. But they've got a really good selection on there. So Meridio, Meridio.com, and their leather watch straps are very good quality, really nice straps.
Oh, lovely. I do like a strap-on.
Did it just get hot in here?
I just let that settle down. Oh, Mr. Grant, follow that one up.
Oh, I can't follow up with anything as exciting as that. Actually, that starts in my clipboard now because I was just looking at it. Hang on a minute. Well, my pick is I've got a Surface Pro that I use as my normal day-to-day machine, and I fancy messing around with using the pen. I don't use the pen anywhere near enough.
Oh yeah.
And I've downloaded a few of the drawing apps to have a muck around with. And the best one I found was Sketchbook, Autodesk Sketchbook.
And it's free.
It's free. A free Windows 10 app. You can get it on. It's available on many devices. So it depends on what you've got choice of. I think there's a good iOS version of it.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes, there is.
Amazon. I use it with my Surface. It's really, really nice. Very intuitive. It didn't take me very long at all to pick up, work out how to use it, and start sketching and things. I really enjoyed sort of sat there for half an hour or so, generally just drawing rubbish, to be honest. But it was just an enjoyable thing to have a little play around with.
Oh, but you just solved a huge problem for me, because at work we've got a 65-inch Windows 10 touchscreen on the wall, and we've been looking for something decent. And we tried all the ones in the Microsoft store, and they've just never.
That's in the Microsoft store. I went through the other ones, and they're all chunky in one way or another. And this was by far the simplest and the nicest one to just go, all right, there we go, and start drawing around with it. It was very, very easy to pick up and use.
I'll install that on Monday.
Give it a twiddle, see what you think of it.
Okay, that's fantastic. Free as well. You can't beat that. Okay,
there's a pro version if you need it, but I couldn't, for what I wanted to do with it, the free version was fine.
It's a bit of doodling, that's all you want, isn't it?
Yeah, for a bit of doodling, that's superb.
Fantastic, I love that. Mr. Hauschel.
I have to say there's some provisos on this because I haven't quite got them set up yet, but just took delivery of a couple of little 960p mini IP cameras. So they've got sort of all the features you'd expect in terms of You know, it's supposed to be decent resolution. It's got fuller IR lighting, so it can do night vision. It's got a microphone. It's got a speaker. It's got a micro SD slot, so you can do local recording. And currently on Banggood, it's actually almost half price. It's one of these is £11.34.
And it's got a hook.
Yeah, and it's got a hook, yes.
That's ridiculously cheap.
And oh you just God. Got, you know, I mean, you know, as I say, normally it's almost £20 for one of these.
Oh, damn you, but, damn you, I'm hitting that orange button.
I mean, on the fact that it's actually got, you know, it's got the IR illumination in there as well, and auto switching, and you know, supposedly 960p, you know, wide angle lens. As I say, speaker and microphones. We've got two-way voice. And it's just powered from a micro USB slot socket in the bottom. So, you know, just need, it just seems like it's, the only one is, I'm having to jump through a few more hoops because, by standard, it does want you to set it up associated with a, iOS or Android app. Right. And, but allegedly you can get it sorted via their PC desktop app. But I haven't yet jumped through the extra hoops to do that yet.
Okay, so the offer only runs through February at the moment.
Yes, there's about 2 days left on the £11.34 price, and then it'll go up to almost £20.
All right.
How do you find Banggood as a place to buy things from? I'm always a bit wary of companies of that ilk.
Yeah, well, I mean, they've started now for a number of their products. They're now started a UK warehouse, so some of their products you can get quite quickly. So I wouldn't order anything that you want quickly off there, because generally it's going to be, as they say, 7 to 20 days UK business. This is the third thing I've ordered off them, so I have been starting off slow. First one I got was a really cheap diagnostic tool for the car, you know, plugging in the service port and stuff with and then Bluetooth to an app. And that was £4.62 to be able to get all your diagnostic information out of a BMW.
Cool.
Yeah, and then I did try to order some LED. Some replacement LED halogen bulbs for one of the big lights that chews up a lot in the ceiling. That one, actually, they said I ordered it, they couldn't fulfill it. No quibbles. They gave me the money back. So, you know, but I've just gone and put that Bluetooth car scanner tool into the chat room as well. But, you know, If they're those sort of prices, and you just order a few things, and you're willing to wait, you're not exactly risking much, are you?
Not exactly.
No. And as I say, the funnily enough, I noticed that for that camera, which only launched on there recently, I think about 2 weeks ago, supposedly they have sold 7,765 of them so far.
Fair enough.
Yeah, we ever want it from Shenzhen, but we're afraid to ask.
Yeah, well, so, you know, it's a lot cheaper than, you know, the flight to the flight out there, isn't it?
Oh god, yeah, it's everything they say in Shenzhen, basically. It's just all the warehouse has been dumped on a web page, but it's useful that they've got this tiny adapters there and things, and you're thinking handy.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, it's a very dangerous, if you don't need it in a hurry, it's a very dangerous site. It kind of is, it's probably following through on the promise of, you know, the glory days of Maplin, where you just find anything for almost nothing.
Yeah.
You know, everything's £1,000 at Maplin.
Yeah, whereas, so as I say, you know, if you do want it quicker, then you just need to filter it to, you know, stuff that is in their UK or EU warehouses, which they've just started setting up, because they're shipping so much across, it's actually worth them having some local warehousing.
Yeah, I just closed the window because that was getting dangerous then.
Well, I tell you what, obviously they do like sending you emails. You can sign out and stuff. But actually, I'm signed up to their email newsletter, And it's wonderful. Their newsletter is a wonderful Aladdin's cave of what the hell's going to be in it this time, from, as I say, gadgets, mobile phones, to women's lingerie. There is everything on this site.
Alan, so I've children to buy shoes for.
They do toys.
Oh, no.
Clothing. Don't know whether they do kids' clothing. Oh, yes, they do. There you go. Kids. Oh. God. Kids clothing.
No.
They have a deal right now, 35% off underpants.
I can remember that.
If you look in the categories, the bottom option in the categories that I've never seen before is intimate apparel.
Oh my God, and look at that. Clamps, cuffs, and collars.
Scary looking underwear for men there.
Flogging toys, gags and masks, ropes and candles, tricky toys, view all.
Oh, and you have to say yes, I'm over 18 to get into the cosplay section.
Oh my giddy arm.
You're right, you do.
Yes, so I'm over 18. Oh, dear God, alive.
There won't be any British CEO kite marks on any of those, though, will there?
No, so it'll explode the minute you turn it on.
I tell you, one I was looking at recently and thinking about is they've got very cheap solar-powered LED lights that I was thinking of sticking some home security lights up on the outside of the house, down the side of the house. And it was sort of, yeah, £11 for a solar-powered LED light, security light for the outside of the house.
That's good.
I'm going to have another look.
And, you know, given that it's self-contained and it's going on the outside of the house and it's only LED voltage and it's solar powered, I'm thinking, you know, well, worth a punt for 11, 12 quid.
Alan, stop it. I've got a show to do.
It's all, no. Paul, it's all on Prime. It's all free.
Shut up. No. Jeffrey, save me, please.
All right, how about if I save you with something that's only going to cost you a couple dollars?
Go for it.
And it's a game that I am so hooked on right now. And
I've heard about this.
It's called Hidden Folks. Oh, so yes. Let me bring this game up over here.
Yes.
Here we go.
That's so it.
It's a search game. So, you know, you have the in this case it's a town or city, and what you have to do is look around and find the various things, you know, like there at the bottom it's showing you what you're looking for. And so if you can move around the city or some of them have been like deserts or jungles, you know, and see different areas, and you can tap on everything. And different things happen. So, like, you tap on something and the door opens, or you can move bushes out of the way, or open a window, or move a car, and then hopefully find whatever it is that you're looking for. And they give you clues to go along with each thing. So in this case, I tapped on a person and got a clue. And the clues are actually really important, because in many cases, you won't be able to find whatever it is without having the clue. And so as you complete each level, you get to move on to the next. And you don't have to find everything on a level, but you do have to find a minimum number of things. So it's not like the game stonewalls you. So you can play at whatever skill level you want. And so you can find a few simple things, move on to the next level. Or like what I like to do, I want to find every single thing on a level before I move on to the next one. So I spend a lot more time exploring through each level and tapping on people and hearing the things they say and just finding cool and interesting things on the levels. The audio effects, I think, are wonderful. It's actually this guy did all the sounds himself. And I'm assuming you can't actually hear anything out of this.
Oh, yeah, I hear that.
Yeah, but... So, you know, I'm just tapping around on stuff. And it's all... It's just all sounds that this guy made himself.
Oh, that must really lend itself to the iPad Pro as well.
Oh, it's wonderful on the iPad Pro. You can play it on an iPhone. But each level is pretty expansive. So that's not true. You have a very expansive level and then one that's small and then another expansive level and one that's small. So on the expansive levels, even on an iPad Pro, there's a lot of scrolling around.
Wow.
To find everything. So on an iPhone, you'd have of course, even more scrolling. But, oh, man, it is so great. And Wind Rider says, poke some crocodiles. Were there crocodiles on this level? Because I enjoy the crocodile sound. I'm not seeing any crocodiles right now. Sorry. But the crocodile sound is a lot of fun. Oh, look, there's a wiener truck. So anyhow, that's Hidden Folks, and in the US it's $3.99, so I'm not sure what that costs in the UK anymore.
Cool.
£16,000.
Yeah. House.
Yeah. Yeah. 30 pounds, 50 pounds.
Yeah. Awesome, thank you. Well, I've got a quick cool thing, and I'm wearing it on my head. It's my new headphones, my lovely blue BTN headphones, Bit the Dust. So these are the new Kitsound Immerse Bluetooth headphones. They're bloody lovely. The sound quality is excellent. Got controls on everything on here. The connection thing, connecting it to your phone is awesome. Oh, I'll put the link in the chat room. That'd help. But the thing I love about them the most is I can go to work, and I can be wireless all the way to work, and then I can plug a auxiliary cable in, and I can have wired headphones as well.
Oh, that's awesome.
So, because what I was finding when I was using Bluetooth headphones on the shows before, I was getting a delay. The Bluetooth, so when I was talking to you, and I'd hear it like a couple of seconds late or whatever. But this now I can wire them straight in. It's brilliant, and they don't use any power when they're wired, so they're absolutely lovely. And I'm really tough. And they look a bit sleek, you know?
Yeah, look nice then.
Looking good, sir.
Thank you very much. And it's not the other thing that's nice is they fit the shape of your ear as well. And they rotate as well and all that sort of stuff. So very comfortable, because I've found a lot of headphones that I wear for shows that I have to wear for like a couple of hours at a time start to hurt, but these ones don't. So very, very well done. Very well done. Okay. Right. So that's me. I'm full on the delicious treats that are you guys. So the only thing that we have to say is, where can we get a hold of you, Mr. Campion?
You can get me at Campion UK on Twitter, loitering in the Slack room, and writing some reviews at britishtechnetwork.com/reviews.
Good man. Thank you very much. Mr. Housel.
Yeah, best place to find me is still Digital Amoeba on Twitter.
Fantastic. Mr. Grant, where can we find you, sir?
Find me in the Slack room at TOABOA on Twitter occasionally, but mostly in the Slack room, if anywhere.
And you can find Jeff everywhere.
Everywhere.
Like, where can we find you, Jeff?
Over at MacObserver.com and on Twitter and Instagram. I'm Jay Gamut. And you can find me on bunches of shows, including here. Also the iOS show, Mac Observer's Daily Observations. And yeah, I get around.
It's not a bad thing.
It's not a bad thing.
I'm Paul's on Twitter, filling in for you in this week. Hopefully the government will be back next week for the back show and the big show and the photo show, hopefully. Check them all out. And join in the Fetish Photo League with Ewan. And join us in the Slack. Send an email to britishtechnetwork@gmail.com and say, let me in. Let me in, little pig. And we'll see you soon. Bye-bye.